This is the Drive and Dish Podcast. Talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy. To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
Look at Tony Parker during the playoffs where he got destroyed by Chris Paul. He shot 29% and averaged 11 points a game during the playoffs. He was bad. In Eurobasket this summer, he was bad. I am not in on the Spurs. I'm really worried about their point guard play.
Kevin Rayfuse.
The Warriors, I don't know what the Warriors suddenly did to get disrespected all of a sudden. Because from game one to the last game in June, game six, this team was the best team in the NBA.
And Justin Kuzart.
And their rebounds, they had about 43 a game, which was like 18. So maybe that's what Tristan Thompson sees and says, look, you guys need help on the rebounding end. Like, pay me money.
Well, if you like that, you're going to love this.
If anything, this is the point where we all sit there and get real excited.
Let's do this!
Let's go.
So everybody probably remembers this, but what was it? It was almost a year ago. Derek Fisher, who used to be friends with Matt Barnes, and used to be, we don't know them, but Matt Barnes has said former friends.
Oh, yeah.
Went out and decided to have relations with Matt Barnes' ex-wife, which...
which he has kids with.
And the kids still live there.
Yes.
And it, that, you know, that's just kind of going against the bro code. You don't hook up with your friend's ex. Your friend's ex-wife.
Yeah.
That's pretty much like it's not acceptable. And it, maybe it's just an ex-girlfriend. You're still going to ask your friend ahead of time.
You mentioned something.
Right.
It's shady.
Yes.
A little bit. So obviously they're not friends now.
Right.
Like at all. They're just not.
And they played on Saturday. Thankfully nothing happened. But that doesn't mean it won't happen in the future.
Right. And well, that's exactly what we were getting at is Matt Barnes was in an interview and he said, when I'm retired, him and I will cross paths again.
Yes.
So if you're Derek Fisher, are you terrified?
No. It's just one of those things where you gotta hope that eventually
he gets past it?
Yeah.
Like, is that something you get past?
You've got a couple years in you. I think that, you know, the kids are gonna be a little bit older. You know, sometimes in life somebody does something to you that's really messed up and you just like you have to let it go, because if you don't let it go, you're the one...
it'll eat you.
...that suffers. Because, yeah, you're the one holding on to that anger. You're the one that's letting that ruin your day.
Right. And so Barnes was in an interview with the New York Daily News, and he said... because they were asking him, are you going to talk to Derek Fisher when you guys play each other?
And he's I'll just say they don't actually play each other. Right.
Well, in Derek a way, Fisher's they kind of do. In a way.
He's behind... Derek Fisher's behind the sidelines. Matt Barnes is on the court.
Yes. Barnes said that he doesn't talk to snakes. He says, I know I got to keep my mouth shut because then he'll run and tell. So we're focused on playing that team, talking about the Knicks. And when I'm retired, him and I will cross paths again.
What is it with NBA players calling everybody snakes? Is this like an NBA term or...
it's shady. Snakes are shady,
I know,
man.
But I feel like people in real life don't use the word snake a lot.
Well, we don't deal with shady people then. I mean, you know, I get the reference.
I guess a lot of like NFL players were also tweeting them or calling them or however they're communicating with them, saying that even it's not okay what you did, but Derek Fisher broke the bro code.
I don't know if you saw the Instagram photo, but Barnes posted it, said the 2015 was like the worst year of his life. That's where he called Fisher the snake again, and saying that the whole thing played out like a bad reality show. He's just like, I want it over with. I want to be out of it. The NBPA filed a grievance for Barnes, and he said he really appreciates that because he doesn't think he'll be reimbursed for the money he lost during the suspension and stuff like that. So it is literally something out of a TV show.
Right.
Like, you don't...
And he drove, like, hours to get there, and we had talked about it when that first happened. And, yeah, like that's, like, from Tucson to Phoenix. And by the time you get there, if you aren't over it, you must be completely livid because you've had an hour and a half to sit there and just think about all the things this guy is doing to your wife.
It's weird, though. But
ex-wife.
Because after all this, he said he doesn't want the league to do anything to Fisher.
Right.
He's like, I don't want you to disappoint.
That's probably because he wants to take matters into his own hands.
After he retires.
Right. And he's probably got a few years left in him. So, you know.
So maybe he'll forgive and forget.
It's just, you know, it's kind of a stain on the NBA. So, you know, get over it, buddy. If you're listening to this and you aren't, but if you are, get over it, man. Things happen. He had some bad luck, too, with, like, dating and models and people throwing him under the bus. He did have a bad year.
Oh, yeah, he did. But he's always like, I don't know. When I watched him play against the Sixers, I hated him. only because he had two like really blatantly awful fouls on us that just like almost hurt our players. And I was like, screw this guy.
Hey, speaking of the Sixers, a couple nights ago, the Sixers played the Bulls and I fell asleep at halftime. The Sixers were up by like 20 or something when I fell asleep. And I woke up this morning and all I hear is Jimmy Butler goes off for 53, beats the Sixers in overtime. And I was like, oh man, poor guys.
I was with my girlfriend and her family and I got Twitter notifications from a bunch of our listeners hitting me up being like, are you and Kevin watching this right now? And I'm like, I can't, I'm not by a TV. Mm-hmm. And then next thing I know, I see Kevin's responses. And I'm just like, I'm not even going to turn the TV on. I don't want to see this.
So Ish Smith, who has been fantastic for you guys, and I threw out this question on our Twitter.
That spin move he put, I don't know if you saw the spin move he put on. It was either Butler or Rose.
I didn't see it.
It was disgusting. It was amazing.
But I threw out the question on our Twitter at Drive and Dish NBA, and I asked, even though Ish Smith has been so great, mm-hmm. do you want Ish Smith taking 25 shots? He took 25 shots in that game. If you're looking at the Sixers, you guys are a developmental team. You have people, you have player Covington, Noel, Ja,
right.
Stauskas. You have players you're trying to develop right now.
Embiid.
Right. You know, he changed agents. But I was just thinking, you haven't even played. Why are you changing agents?
Well, actually, fun fact, that agent was Allen Iverson's agent.
Okay.
So maybe that's...
But where's he going? He hasn't played.
Mm. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he's got something going. Who knows?
What's the agent going to do? So, but I mean, as a Sixers fan, as somebody that follows the Sixers in the media, if you want to call it that, do you want Ish Smith taking 25 shots a game, or is that detrimental to the development of your other players? Like, would you rather have Nick Stauskas throwing up 15 shots a game?
No, because he can't make the damn shot any. That's one of my biggest frustrations this year with the Sixers is Nick Stauskas. We were so excited to finally steal him from the Kings, and he comes here and he can't hit a shot. Mm-hmm. I'm watching him jack up these open threes, and it's like, dude, come on, just make it. And so that's one of my biggest frustrations. But I mean, I guess I see your point of wanting him to keep taking those just to get used to it, and so when it comes time and we're winning and we need to be in the spots. But I feel like there's just a feeling around the team that just we need to get some wins or something. So
right.
So maybe we're just going to get some wins.
Well, Mike D'Antoni seems like he's worked out for you guys. Mm-hmm. You are listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rafuse is late again, but don't worry. He will be here once we get into the main segment of the show. I'm Tim Tompkins. I have our producer, Justin Kuzart, in front of me.
Hotel haunted, huh? SMH, lights cutting off by itself.
You know how long it took me to figure out what SMH meant?
Oh,
like
no.
Years. Now it's my favorite thing to put, but who is it?
Jordan Clarkson.
Oh,
dude. Dude was being haunted the other night.
Yeah, he's playing.
Yeah, well, no, he's actually. All right, actually. He's doing all right on my fantasy team, so yeah. That's really about the most I see from the Lakers is I just see how their fantasy players are doing.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I don't like about the Lakers, and some of the arenas do this, the Nets do this, a few others, and I'm blanking on them off the top of my head, but you know when they make the court really bright and they black out the audience?
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that.
What's that?
I don't find it fun to watch. Like, I'd rather see...
People
and like Oracle and the fans going crazy.
We know why they're doing that at the Lakers right now.
Because no one's there. No one's there. Always done that. Honestly, the Suns could probably take a playbook out of the Lakers right now and like black out the arena so hard to see us. Because seeing empty seats isn't fun. But anyway, every week on the show, we like to give a shout out to somebody who is kind enough to give us a shout out on iTunes by leaving us a review, because it really does help us move up the ranks as far as searchability goes when it comes to podcasts.
It's a 5-star, so we're on a good roll here. And it says, I like the personalities, but non-basketball is too much for non-players/coaches. I will give 5 stars to Zachary's buttery tone and hardcore stance on marijuana. It's about gosh darn time somebody with a breakout platform not sell out and choose to steadfastly stand by sound principle.
Is that it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's it.
So you're like reading the review, and first off, there's no one named Zachary on the podcast.
I'm assuming he's talking about Kevin's buttery.
But you read that, and you're like, did he mean to leave this for a different podcast?
Well, no, because Kevin mentioned his stance on marijuana.
Yeah, we had a whole segment of it. We're talking about Al Jefferson.
Yeah. But remember, like, it was 2 or 3 reviews ago, they called me Josh or something like
right.
that. So I like this trend. I like this trend. People who don't listen to the podcast are going to read these reviews and be like, who's Zachary? Who's Josh? And who's Joel?
And who just got done talking? That is Justin. I am Tim. Kevin is coming in.
No, I'm Josh.
Josh. Let's do news.
Tell me something I do not know. Do not know.
Now. If you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA News on the Drive and Dish podcast.
We need to know now.
All right, first in your news, Matt Barnes was fined $35,000 by the NBA for remarks about violence. He said, violence is never the answer, but sometimes it is. He said this about his confrontation with Derek Fisher. Joakim Noah is going to be out 4 to 6 months because of shoulder surgery. It is awkward, though, because Joakim Noah may have played his final game with the Bulls as he becomes a free agent in the offseason. They have started giving more minutes to Bobby Portis. The Brooklyn Nets are expected to pursue Tom Thibodeau as head coach once they hire a new general manager. Thibodeau was fired by the Bulls after the playoffs last season. The Kings have offered a trade to the Pelicans, Eric Gordon, and Alonzo G for Rudy Gay. We'll see what happens, though. That's your news for this week.
Something.
We have a special guest on the line. We have Paul Garcia. He's at Twitter at Paul Garcia PS. He's an NBA writer for Project Spurs. Paul, thanks for joining us, man.
How's it going, guys?
It seems like we're not going to waste any time. Let's get right into this. It seems like a cliche question at this point, but you know, the Spurs over the years have always had this kind of theme of being underrated and flying under the radar and then getting into the playoffs and being an absolute juggernaut. And I know going into this season, obviously the target was on the Warriors' back with, you know, Steph Curry mania in full effect right now. They're defending champs, so obviously they deserve that respect. But it seems as of late, you know, the Spurs started this season and they were quietly creeping up there. And now at this point, I think everyone knows that the Spurs are every bit as good as the Warriors are. And I think a lot of people may even see the Spurs as favorites now. Is this team the Death Star that it seems it is? How do you think the Spurs handle the second half with there being a lot more attention on them now than there was kind of at the beginning of the season?
I mean, for the first part of the season, I mean, from the way that they've played, yes, they are like a Death Star. You know, they're juggernaut defensively. They really suffocate you. They make you, you know, take the worst possible shot, which is a mid-range jumper. A lot of teams want to use the rim and shoot threes, and the Spurs absolutely take that away. They don't let you do that with their defense. And then their offense is kind of just starting to click these last two or three weeks, where they're almost putting 120 on the board. So the offense is kind of clicking. LaMarcus Aldridge is getting more comfortable. They're getting a lot of rest because they're blowing teams out, you know, early. They've had a double-digit lead in 38 games already this season. They've already had almost half their games where they've had a 20-point lead. So they're really just beating teams really, really badly, and that way they're getting a lot of rest, not playing fourth quarters. Or Pop can easily give LaMarcus a night off, give Tony Parker, give Tim Duncan a night off, Manu Ginobili, some of these older guys over 30. But also a lot of it has to do with the fact that, from what I see, there's really only four, like, really elite teams right now, which is you know, Golden State, San Antonio, the Cavs, and the Thunder. San Antonio, really, the only team they've played out of that group is just the Thunder, which was on the opening night. So they really haven't played those four marquee games just yet of those juggernaut type of teams. Everybody else, you know, around the league, they've been almost like mediocre or just like floating around 500. There's not really a lot of separation into the, you know, really good teams. So I think, yeah, the schedule has a lot to do with it. This month should be fun and interesting because they are going to see the Cavs twice and they're going to see Golden State once for the first time on the 25th. But outside of that, there's not really much of a measuring stick for them. You know, it almost like you look at the schedule ahead and it's like every game you're expecting them to just take a double-digit lead against the team and eventually, you know, hold them off. The Knicks were really good against them. They really fought. They were competitive. San Antonio eventually, you know, in the fourth quarter, they built a 12-point lead, and they were, Manu Ginobili said this after the game, they were about to blow it open, but then, you know, the shots just didn't go in. It was just a bad shooting night for them. And, of course, the Knicks were able to get back in it. But outside of that, I mean, they're just, you know, the level of competition in the league as a whole doesn't seem like it. It kind of favors the Warriors and Spurs to just go on these juggernaut records and just, you know, have these double-digit leads nightly.
You just brought up the Golden State game that they have coming up in January, and I know a lot of NBA fans were really upset the NBA waited so long to schedule this matchup. Is this, in your opinion, are we going to be able to see a true testament to whether or not the Spurs are able to beat Golden State in what might become the Western Conference Finals? Or do you think we're going to see Pop being Pop and rest a couple of those players in that game intentionally?
That's a good point. That's actually what I was about to talk about. There's two ways to look at it. You know, the NBA fan and all of us wants to see that match, you know, number one versus number two. You know, hopefully everybody's healthy by then. So then, you know, there shouldn't be an excuse. Both teams are coming off a night off that on that night on the 25th. In the past, you know, the 2 years that the Spurs played Miami in the finals, both Pop and Coach Spoelstra, they would purposely, you know, in the regular season, they wouldn't play all their guys against each other. They kind of just, you know, they didn't want to show their lineup, show their full rotation, show their game plan, you know, against each other to show that card, so that way in the playoffs, if they were to meet in the finals, you know, they wouldn't know what each other is going to do. So not only Pop might do that, I think there's a chance of that, but also I think Steve Kerr, you know, he's a guy who came from Pop's type of program, so he might also be willing to do that. If he thinks that, you know, if these two teams think that, you know, it's going to come down to them too, toward the end of the year in the conference finals, then I think there is definitely a good chance that we see that, and obviously the fans and all of us don't want to see that. We want to see them go head-to-head. But there is a chance that that could happen.
Well, I guess my question is, did the Spurs work their team around specifically stopping the Warriors, or did the Spurs kind of stumble in and saw that this worked and it just happens to be, you know, the complete opposite way that the Warriors are playing as well? Or did they purposely go out and say, all right, this is how the Warriors are playing, we're going to stop specifically that?
I think that they actually put it on their personnel. So they went out and they got LaMarcus Aldridge, who they were going after Aldridge and Marcus Gasol. They had the cap space to get either of them. And, of course, Aldridge is the one who chose San Antonio. And so, you know, getting Aldridge and also, you know, including David West, then with the shift focusing more to Kawhi Leonard, you know, Pop's talked about how strong he's going to develop his system around what's their strength, which is obviously post-scoring with an Aldridge. And the mid-range jumper with West and Aldridge, and then also Kawhi, who's becoming a better post scorer almost every game. So they're kind of developing their system that way. They're not really doing it to match Golden State. There's very few instances where they've actually gone small ball. They usually keep LaMarcus and Diaw or West and Duncan against any team that goes small. The team I can remember is Indiana. They have Paul George and C.J. Miles along with just one big. So when they played them, San Antonio still kept it big with West and Diaw or West and Aldridge, you know, some formation of that. So that's why I'm very interested to see when they play Golden State. Do they match up against that death ball lineup with Draymond Green at the center, or do they just say, you know what, y'all can use Draymond Green, but we're going to keep Aldridge in there or Duncan, and we're going to, you know, post him every time and try to get the defense shifted. So that's the thing why everybody's waiting for the 25th, because you do want to see, you know, how are the Spurs going to defend the Warriors? How are they going to match up? Are they going to keep their system in place, which is what they've been consistent with, which is keeping two bigs on the floor? Or are they going to try to go small to try to match Golden State?
Well, and one of the players that has been a staple of this team for so long is Tim Duncan. And it seems this year that he's quietly becoming a much less focal centerpiece of the offense. I guess, you know, how has Tim adjusted his game this year? And how do you think it will, you know, how do you think he'll play in as this team marches towards the playoffs?
It's more if you got to look at it on the defensive end. He's still elite. The guy's really good. That's the reason why they're the number one defense in the league. Him and LaMarcus. I mean, players have talked about it after the game. Opposing players, how it's just hard because the other wing players kind of funnel them into going to the paint. As soon as they enter that area, there's LaMarcus and Tim in their lane. And you know, they don't foul anybody. They really just they either block their shots timely or they just contest it really well. So defensively, he's still one of the top defenders in the league in the paint. Offensively, he's had to take a back seat, and you know, and this is more of an adjusting role for him. He's not used to this, where he's really not getting a lot of shots in a possession unless, you know, all four other guys haven't had a good look, and then they have to throw it to him. And either he's got to take a mid-range jumper, which he's not hitting right now. That's never been a very comfortable shot for him lately in the last few years. Or if he has a post up, you know, it's usually against one of the better opposing defenders on the opposite side. And so, you know, he's gotten leaner over the few years, so his post ups are a little bit more difficult for him. He doesn't have the size like he used to physically, but he can still, you know, get it done. You know, he had his first scoreless game in his career. He didn't score a point, but then he bounced back and he had a season high 18 points. So it's there. He's kind of just harnessing it, but he's also adjusting to a role where he's no longer the guy who sets the pick and you know, goes off for a role or gets a post up. Now it's LaMarcus who gets all the touches. It's Kawhi. And so he's kind of in that Tiago splitter, like role player role, where he kind of just has to either crash the board, make the passes the right way to players. But, you know, he's in there a lot. His basketball IQ on offense, I mean, LaMarcus, all of his assists, most of them have come from either Parker or Duncan. They work well on that high-low. Duncan throws the alley-oops to Kawhi. That's a play that they have in their playbook. So he's still efficient on the court when he's on there. But obviously scoring, if you just look at scoring, it's going to be down this year. I think he'll probably finish with less than 10 points a game. But when they do see a mismatch and they need him to score, you know, 18 to 21, he can do it.
And I guess my other question is, and we had posted about this on Reddit that we were going to be talking to you, so some Spurs fans hit us up with questions. And one of their question was, when will it become Leonard/Aldridge the go-to option in crunch time as opposed to one of the big three players? Like, are they going to specifically let Leonard and Aldridge try to win games for them if they need them to, or are they still going to rely on maybe the big three?
They're trying to develop that to where they want to include Aldridge against the Knicks. It was a close game, and they actually let Aldridge stay in the game. There's been some games where Pop pulls him out and he puts Duncan. But the thing that people got to realize is that they don't have many close games this year. They've only had about seven where they've actually been within 10 that come down to the wire like in the last 5 minutes. Everything's been almost a blowout nightly, or at least a 10 to 15 point win. So it's very hard. The players have talked about this in the locker room. It's hard for them to actually get that experience of a close game because they don't have many situations. So from what we've seen, you know, just watching it from the media standpoint, it is a lot of Duncan, Manu, Kawhi, and Tony. And they still use a lot of their old you know, backdoor cut plays and things like that to get to Parker and Manu looks at the rim. But you know, they don't really go to an ISO play for either LaMarcus or Kawhi. That hasn't been inputted yet. They tried to a little bit last night against the Knicks, but it just wasn't working. There's been some games where Aldridge has been able to hit the post 2 or 3 minutes, but like I said, the data size, the sample size isn't really there right now because of, you know, they haven't had many close games. So you know, as they play the Warriors and the Cavs and the Thunder coming up here in the second half of the season, this should be interesting to see which close games they have and how they do, if they do go to one of those players as the go-to guy.
Has Danny Green had a disappointing season?
If you talk about just offense, yes. Defensively, he's still one of their top guys. He's, there's a reason why Pop still has to play him every game. It's because of the defense. He can check James Harden for an entire game. That way Kawhi can, you know, be on the other side and doing other things on defense. Last night, when Kawhi needed a break against Carmelo Anthony, Danny Green did a really good job defending him. So on defense, he's still one of the top guys on the team. That's why he still has a spot. Now, offensively, he has struggled. In the first part from October through December, he was shooting almost like 29% from three. He just could not find his threes. A big part of that is that they're coming in different situations of how he's getting them. It's more like spot-up where it's either coming out of the post from either LaMarcus or Kawhi, and he's just not used to catching that way. He was always in a rhythm of you know, either coming off screens or passing and you know, doing little shuffle steps before he received it from that old Spurs system of this, like, you know, constant motion and ball movement. And so he's had a difficult adjustment. However, in this new year, he did say that he wanted to, you know, make more threes in the new year. And since January started, he's already made 11 threes in the last four games. I mean, he's really quickly. He had a 6 of 8 game to open the new year against the Rockets, and he's kind of getting it. He's getting it together, which obviously can become scary if you start quitting in Danny Green's season. So offensively, he hasn't had a good year, but defensively, he's still one of the top guys in their team.
Well, in the West, it seems to be all about seeding. We always talk about, if you're in the players you're going to match up in the playoffs. Is there a team that you think the Spurs see and kind of want to avoid maybe in the first or second round that they just might not match up well against? I know you're saying they're pretty much blowing out teams so far this season, but is there a team that maybe they don't want to see in the playoffs if they can avoid them?
Obviously, I think both the Spurs and Warriors, you don't want to see Oklahoma City in the second round. So basically, if you end up with the 2 seed, you're going to see those guys in round 2 if you advance. The Spurs lost to Oklahoma City in the first round. They beat them two, three years ago on their way to a championship. But, you know, Oklahoma City is just a tough team to deal with. You got Durant, you got Westbrook, you know, Ibaka, and then they have a new supporting cast. And they've been struggling a little bit, but, you know, they're still a really good team. San Antonio might feel confident they can still beat them because they have that Kawhi Leonard, Danny Green tandem that they can throw on Westbrook and Durant and switch off of throughout the game. Plus, they also have Jonathan Simmons off the bench, who was an all-D-league defender last year, and he's been playing really well for them. And Pop's given some minutes against some of the better scorers in the league. But obviously, you know, having to go through Oklahoma City and then going on to the conference finals against the Warriors, if they're there too, then that's obviously a tough road for San Antonio. So that would probably be the one team that they'd want to avoid.
So one of the big keys for the Spurs going into the season, we said, would be Tony Parker. And we wondered about his durability. And so far this year, he's looked like the Tony Parker we all have seen in the past, and he's been such a key to this team's, you know, we know in the past in the playoffs that Tony Parker has been kind of the guy who really carries them come playoff time. I guess while he's been hurt in the past, do you think, are there any concerns about his durability left, I guess, or do you think he's kind of showing this year that he's here, he's in shape, and he's ready to go?
It's one that he's in shape and he's ready to go, but also the fact that this team, all the talent that they have now, this is helping Tony, it's benefiting Tony. He's scoring more in the paint this year, you know, getting layups. And then also just the way that they're blowing these teams out, Pop can comfortably give him now nights off where he couldn't do that last year. If Tony sat out last year, it's because he was hurt. He had a lot of lower leg injuries this year. You know, if anything, if even the slightest of bothering him, Pop will sit him. You know, he will not let him play. He missed like 3 games in a row about 2 weeks ago. And that's just for rest. I mean, that's the thing about this team is that if anybody has any kind of little nagging injury, he can Pop can easily say, you know, you're not going to play tonight, and they can still, you know, take a double digit lead against the average opponent. And Tony's been really good. If you just look at his points per game, they're not going to be up there. They're going to probably finish around 10 or 12. He's not going to score a lot, but when they need him to score, he can put up like eight to 12 points in a quarter. You know, that's the thing. He's kind of being like a quarterback of just making sure everybody gets their shots. Kawhi gets his shots. LaMarcus gets his shots and pick and rolls. But then, you know, if third or fourth quarter comes and you know, the team's still, it's still like a very close game, he will get more aggressive and either start driving to the rim or he'll start taking his mid-range shots. So as long as they keep these huge leads going, he's going to definitely keep getting that rest and probably staying healthy as the playoffs approach.
One of the I guess a lot of Reddit fans and really Spurs fans in general are really having a lot of fun with this new guy that the Spurs seem to have found. And I want to make sure I say his name right. Boban Marjanovic. I believe that's how you say it.
Boban Marjanovic.
Boban Marjanovic. That's right. 7'3" guy. I saw that they were using a boat oar to defend him at the rim for practice. I guess, what is the actual feeling about, Boban? I mean, are the Spurs going to keep using this guy?
As far as becoming a rotation piece, in crunch time against in the playoffs, probably not. He's not going to see a lot of minutes. However, he's been really good on nights when Timmy needs a night off or LaMarcus needs a night off or somebody gets in foul trouble. You can actually put him in the game, and he's going to be productive. He's not like a less efficient player. He's really good. And they actually start working their system around him. All they do is they try to feed him the ball in the paint, or they run pick and rolls with him, and it's very tough for a defense to try to defend his pick and roll. Or his post-ups. He's got a lot of size. He was a former one of the EuroLeague players, top players last year, Srbina Zvezda out in Serbia. But when it comes to like a real team like the Thunder, the Warriors, he cannot stay on the floor because defensively he doesn't have the foot speed, the lateral quickness to keep up with those type of teams. But on nights, like I said, when they put him in against some teams that are a little bit less as far as close to mediocre the records. And some of their guys need a night off. Boban, Pop will give him 20 minutes, and the guy will come off with like 14 points and almost like 7 rebounds. He does it very quickly. I think he already has like 2 different Spurs records where he grabbed like so many rebounds in like this many minutes. Like, he's already broken some records in the time that he's been there. Pop got a little upset with the fans a few nights ago because he was on. When he goes in the game at home, they go crazy. I mean, if he touches the ball, if they call his name, he gets like a huge ovation. And so the other day he was shooting free throws and they started shouting MVP, and obviously that would upset Pop. So after the game he told the media, I didn't appreciate how the fans were doing this. They're kind of treating him almost like a sideshow kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I think they've gotten a little bit better, and he hasn't seen as much floor time since that incident. But he will on nights that some guys need rest.
When we're getting prepared for an interview, when you're watching the league and you're trying to cover the league as a whole, there's going to be certain teams that you don't watch as much as other teams. So leading up to this interview, I'm like, okay, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I'm going to watch a Spurs game every single night. So that's what I did. My biggest concern with this team was being able to guard transition defense. Now, I'll be completely honest with you, in every single game I watched this week with the Spurs, was just an absolute blowout where I could take nothing from. I mean, it was like, and so I saw Marjanovic, and he was playing in garbage minutes. Elongated point I'm trying to make now is, out of all those games I watched, I was not able to figure out if the Spurs have been able to fix that transition defense at all. You having seen every single game this season, what are your thoughts?
They have, they don't turn it over much. They only own about 14 times a game. And in transition, they have some of the better defenders as far as Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green. Danny Green's are actually a really good transition defender. They're really good about not going for offensive rebounds, so they do definitely get back in transition, so they're not allowing a lot of teams. But like you said, watching that, there's like a bunch of blowouts. They don't have a lot. There's not a lot of teams out there right now that are constantly pushing the ball and getting out there. The one I can think of is maybe like Westbrook, who grabs defensive rebound, takes off full court, or the Warriors who would push it. They saw John Wall earlier the year and Bradley Beal when they were still healthy, and they had their way with San Antonio's transition defense. But outside of that, I mean, there's not they usually get back. Maybe if it's garbage time minutes, sure some of those, like Boban won't be able to get back. David West has some trouble getting back. But when their core guys are on their floor, the 9 core guys that they have, they're actually really good at taking away transition looks from teams.
Well, I guess my question is, we know Kawhi is stepping up big time, and Aldridge is starting to get into the swing of things. I guess it's kind of a two-part question. Is Kawhi Leonard to you the most underrated star in the league right now? And is there another player on the Spurs that maybe is doing a lot but maybe isn't seeing as much credit or isn't being talked about as much as they deserve?
As far as Kawhi, I mean, I think he's getting the national attention. I think, I mean, it's not obviously there because the guy, he really doesn't have a personality.
Whether
both on camera and even off camera, I've spent some time with him, and the guy doesn't talk. Like, he'll treat you the same way as he's, he's just quiet. You watch him on the bench, he doesn't really talk to his teammates. He's just there. He just wants to play basketball. That's all he ever does. But, you know, nationally, I think they had the latest All-Star votes, and he was, like, right behind Draymond Green for becoming a starting forward in the West. So, obviously, the national, you know, just the fans in general are noticing who Kawhi is. National media, you know, he's won a few Player of the Weeks here already. He's definitely, as far as – I looked up a stat before yesterday's game. He takes less than 15 shots per game, and he's the leading scorer in the league in that category, where he's scoring 20 a night. So he doesn't take a lot of shots. He doesn't play a lot of minutes because, you know, they've been blowing teams out. So he doesn't get – and he has his things, like his dunking, his ability to take away to steal the ball and go down court, but, of course, he never gloats. He's the one guy after a game, you know, when they'll win, but, like, the other day they won by, like, 25 against somebody. And he was the one who pointed out how the defense was sloppy because they gave up 100 points. Like he's almost like a coach on the floor, and as far as how he takes the team. But I definitely think he's kind of getting people are noticing him more so. They're kind of realizing. I think media wise, people know that, you know, he doesn't play a lot because the Spurs blow teams out, and they run a system where he only takes, you know, less than 15 shots a game. They don't do a lot of one-on-one ISO stuff. And then a guy who I would say is not getting as much attention, but should. Is David West. I mean, the guy has been really good for that bench. He's brought up. He helps Patty Mills, Manu, Boris Diaw, the three of those guys. Just spacing wise, with that mid range jumper, he's shooting almost 52% from there. His ability, his IQ is passing. He knows when to throw the right pass, which is very. You know, I didn't watch a lot of Indiana basketball the last few years, but you know, I didn't know he had that type of passing IQ where you just put him in there with that bench and he just fits right in. And I think that he's the guy who's not getting a lot of attention right now, but he definitely should because and he's played very few minutes. And in the minutes that he's in there, he's very productive on both sides of the ball for San Antonio. And that's one of the guys that I'm seeing.
Yeah, and I think Boris Diaw has just been incredibly instrumental in that second unit. So I'm pretty sure the one burning question that all Spurs fans have is can you tell us a little bit about Boris Diaw and his espresso machine?
I started with the Danny Green. Had an interview against Houston when he broke out 6 of 8 threes, but he got to be the guy that we interviewed. And he talked about how LaMarcus Aldridge calls Boris tea time because, you know, he's just very casual. It's like he's drinking a cup of tea while he's going to the rim. So, you know, that got all the headlines and everything. And then, you know, two nights later when they played the Jazz, Boris didn't come out to talk. But, you know, as we were there talking to the players, you look in his locker and there's a little black espresso machine plugged into the wall in his locker. And there's like three little cups there. And we're like, what in the world? So, you know, one of the San Antonio Express news writers, Jeff McDonald, tweeted that. And, you know, we're not allowed to take pictures as media in the locker room, so that's why we couldn't put a picture up. But, yeah, he definitely had it two nights ago. After the game ended, he actually took a picture. I think Kyle Anderson got credit with the photo, and Kyle Anderson took a picture of Diaw drinking from that cappuccino machine. But, yeah, it's definitely the espresso machine. It's definitely there. He's a guy who, you know, he right now, like I wrote about it about a week ago. This guy's that, you know, he's enjoying this season because he's playing less than 20 minutes a night. He's only having to shoot either post-ups against mismatches, which is like smaller guards or smaller wings. And he's only having, when he has to take a three, it's because it's late in the shot clock and he's going to get from his favorable spots on the floor. I mean, you look at his shot chart and the guy is like in heaven right now. It's the shots that he's getting. He doesn't have to play a lot of minutes. And so you're seeing a very, very productive Boris Diaw this season for San Antonio.
Yeah, just I'm looking at the post that he put on Instagram now, that picture. And just the caption is gold, still undefeated at home and an espresso, what else? But I love the barista hashtag. Yes. I mean, that is just pure social media gold. But, Paul, why we have you on the line before we get you out of here, you know, we're going to start wrapping this up. You know, tell us about Project Spurs. You know, what do you guys do? You know, we brought on Aaron Prine earlier this year. But remind our listeners who maybe listen for the first time, you know, what is the website all about?
ProjectSpurs.com. We focus on San Antonio Spurs. We write we have a few writers who write different pieces, but one of our guys he usually every week he breaks down the West as far as which teams to watch out for the Spurs, which ones can be their most competition coming up as the playoffs approach. We have another guy who does some player feature focuses where he'll take a player a week and he writes a piece about him, like our latest one was David West. We have our recaps after every game. Aaron, as you mentioned, he and another one of our writers, Jose Grijalva, they run a weekly podcast called the Spurs Cast, and I think we're up to like episode of almost like 300, 400, close to there, somewhere around there, which is like an hour long, and it's really detailed as far as the team from both like the 15th player on the floor all the way to like some of the other teams out in the league. And then myself, I like to take a sample size of what I'm seeing on the floor that night at the arena, and then I write a piece that kind of throws everything together. So like last night's piece, They had 60 points in the paint, and I went ahead and just did a whole thing on how they're doing in the paint, which obviously it's gotten better.
Oh, and we appreciate you joining us. But one final question. I got to ask one final thing before we do the outro, because I talked to Aaron about this off the air, but I wanted to ask you on the air because, you know, Justin and I are a bit younger. We're 25 and Justin's 24. And, you know, I'm not going to say Tim's age and throw him under the bus here. But I guess the point is, you know, when the Spurs won their first title and kind of their beginning of run to greatness was in 1999. So I was 9 years old when that happened. And I guess, you know, for me as a Sixers fan and for Tim as a Suns fan, you know, we haven't quite had a run like this. But how fun is it being a Spurs fan knowing for the last 20 plus years now that you guys have just always been in the mix?
It's obviously been, you know, it's been really good, really great, actually. Just, you know, every year you never felt, you know, the expectations in the fans here in town, they're always that, you know, it's championship or bust season every single year since 1999, you know, or since Tim Duncan came in. And you know, me getting into the media back in 2011, it's helped me just, I like the media because I try to throw my fan side of it a little bit out of there. So, like, you know, the last championship, I celebrated 2005 and 2007 as a fan, you know, with family, with friends. I was there. But then in 2013, I had to be media. I was at the arena the night that they won against Miami. Or 2014, and so I was able to kind of step back and not like applaud and get it too crazy into it, but it was a cool experience. You know, I was in the locker room, the champagne's going everywhere. Boris Diaw has his arm around me. You know, he's like just having a great time. It was a really cool night. But you know, I had to keep my temperament down. But yeah, I think San Antonio Spurs fans as a whole, they've been really privileged. And then you know, you got Kawhi now, you got LaMarcus, and this stuff could go on for the next 5 to 6 years. This run where they kind of feel like it's championship or bust every year. Now it's going to be you know, the day that it finally comes when they finally don't, you know, they're at that level where they're either mediocre or they're having a tough year. That will be very like an eye opener for them because they are not used to that. You know, they still have expectations for this team. When this team was like 2-1 to start the year, they were already going crazy. These fans they live by every win and they you know, and every loss they go crazy, and you know, they act like it's the end of the world if they lose to the game in the regular season in January or something.
Yeah, that's amazing. Definitely a great fan base down there. But again, Paul Garcia has joined us on the line. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at PaulGarciaPS. Check out ProjectSpurs.com. Paul, thanks again.
Thanks a lot, guys. Definitely looking forward to next time I could come on.
So thank you so much for listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. As always, go to the website if you have a chance at driveanddishpodcast.com. We always update it with new photos, new videos, and all sorts of ways that you can hit us up. Also, if you want to send us a message about something, there's a really cool contact form. And unlike Twitter, it doesn't have a character count. And we do enjoy getting those emails and the feedback on what you think of this show, driveanddishpodcast.com.
And you can hit us up on Twitter at Drive and Dish NBA. You can hit me personally at Justin C. on the air. You can hit Tim at Radio Tim NBA. And you can hit Kevin at Refuse to Lose.
And again, check out the show on the website, like Tim said, driveanddishpodcast.com. Subscribe on iTunes. Again, we really appreciate those reviews. It's not just to stroke our ego. It actually helps us move up the rankings. If you're not listening on an Apple device, if you're on Android or some other type of phone, check us out on Stitcher, Player FM, or in the Google Play Store now. Any of those ways, you can check us out there. But again, you know, thanks for listening.
Hakuna Matata.
I think we've done enough dancing for today, so why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, star side.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Pigeon hole!
Da-da-da-da-da. Hey! Da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da-da. Hey!
Let's go while we're young.
All right, I think they get the point.
Ha 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 ha!